Today on Vox Talks Economics, Southern Whites and the New Right in the United States. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Center for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics. So remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. In the 20th century, at least 6 million African Americans migrated from poor southern states to northern cities, escaping discrimination and poverty and changing the course of American history on the way. We know this as the Great Migration, but at least as many southern whites also migrated. So can we see the impact of this other migration in the US today? Sam Bazzi of the University of California, San Diego thinks so, and he joins me now. Sam, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Sam, in your paper, you call this the other great migration of the 20th century. So how big was it? How many people and why did they leave the South?
Great question. So it's actually not entirely straightforward to give a short answer to how many left. There are estimates that range between 8 million and 17 million throughout the 20th century.
Crikey.
I think the truth probably lies somewhere in between. And, you know, they're leaving for lots of different reasons. A lot of them are leaving to strike off in search of new opportunities. In the latter part of the 1800s, in the wake of the Civil War, some of this was new opportunities out west as the U.S. was moving westward. For others throughout the 20th century, it's going off in search of some of the new manufacturing jobs that are popping up all over the United States and in different parts of the Midwest and the West. So lots of different reasons, but some economic, I think, just as in any other migration context, but others perhaps driven by ideological motivations in the wake of the Civil War and the end of slavery. I think there was some sense of effort to move out of the South and seek out places where you would find fewer Black folks competing with you in the labor market if you're on the lower end of the educational distribution. So I think you want to think about economic and ideological forces driving some of the out migration.
See, it might be good at this point to take a step back, especially for a non-US audience. And can you explain why whites in the southern states hold different preferences and beliefs to the rest of the United States?
So first and foremost, this is really a story about slavery, I think, in many respects. And the white population of the South grew up prior to the Civil War in a society where they were at the top of the social hierarchy, and many of them, both in their own families, in their communities, on the plantations on which they work, you know, they were indirectly enslaving the Black population. And as a result, this would surely shape one's views of the racial hierarchy in society and the role that whites should be playing in politics and economics in a variety of domains of public life.
And where did these Southern whites end up? Where did they migrate to?
They really went everywhere except the really dense Northeast. And I think in the beginning of out-migration after the Civil War, many of them, as I alluded to earlier, were going out west. And there were a lot of things drawing them westward. A big part of it was the abundance of land and kind of new opportunities and for farming and other kind of agricultural activities, but also the prospects of settling places that had not yet established local institutions and very limited presence of government. And so I think the view was for some whites fleeing the South after the Civil War was that the West was really a place where one could start over and build society in a way that was able to replicate some of the superiority and supremacy of whites in the local community. And so that characterizes migration in the latter part of the 1800s. And then when you look more broadly, throughout the 1900s, white out-migrants from the South are really settling everywhere, from remote rural areas to small towns to big cities. But they tended to go to many more destinations outside the South, whereas the Black population, especially in the middle of the 1900s, they were increasingly concentrating in the densest urban parts of the non-South, whereas whites were dispersing much more widely across the country.
So as these Southern whites spread out, did they manage to take their racist attitudes with them and influence the communities in which they ended up?
Yeah, that's a key hypothesis that we're really after in the paper. I think it's important to be clear up front that racism was a pervasive feature of American culture and life at this period everywhere, not just in the South. But you want to think about a gradient of racial animosity. And certainly if you look at survey data and beginning in the middle of the 1900s, you see that the most racist attitudes were found among whites living in the South. Mm-hmm. And then the next most racist attitudes among whites born in the South, but living outside the South. And then the least racist attitudes among whites born outside the South and living outside the South. And so you really want to think about a continuum. But what's happening is that these Southern white migrants from the South are really bringing some of that racial animus that they grew up with in the South and spreading that to the rest of the country and perhaps exacerbating some underlying racist attitudes and ideas that may have been more latent in certain parts of the non-South. Our results suggest that the Southern white migrants are really kind of amplifying what may have already been latent in a lot of these communities and perhaps stoking new forms of racial animus and exclusionary policies and so on.
Sam, a lot of these Southern whites would have lived in segregated communities where they were. When they then moved to other places, did they increase the amount of segregation there as well?
That's a great question, and certainly something that we see happening in a couple of distinct ways. But before telling you about that, let me just mention up front that I think there's two important ways to think about segregation within the South prior to the end of slavery. The first is that certainly some whites who were not living on plantations and didn't own slaves themselves, they would have been living in segregated communities with very little contact with the Black population on a day-to-day basis. But for many others, I think they would have grown up in close proximity to the enslaved populations living and working on their plantations or inside their homes. Okay, so with that aside, I think one thing that we see with the Southern whites living outside the South is that they seem to be exacerbating segregation in two ways. The first is at a more aggregate county level. Many of them settled in communities outside the South and built up institutions that effectively excluded Blacks from residing in large parts of the county. And over time, what you saw is effectively a retreat of Black populations from many counties outside the South, such that by the middle of the 1900s, around 15% of counties outside the South had no Black population at all, compared to around 3 or 4% in the earlier part of the century prior to the great migration of whites. The second thing you see is that on a much more local level, there's a lot of policies that were put in place throughout the 1900s that excluded Blacks from living in certain neighborhoods within a county. And so you can even look sort of at a very fine level within a county and you see entire neighborhoods that are all white, you know, next to entire neighborhoods that are all Black. And so it's this sort of high resolution segregation that you can see happening alongside the much more aggregate segregation preventing Blacks from living in large collections of communities outside the South.
One thing that I found very interesting about this, Sam, is it's a big migration, yes, but still in the places where these Southern whites finished, then they would be in a minority at a time when their preferences and attitudes were becoming less socially acceptable. So how did they manage to spread and preserve their influence?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different mechanisms there. The first is through a general set of social interactions. This could happen in schools. This could happen in religious institutions, the church being an important institution. And that's one thing that we certainly see is that the Southern whites set up religious institutions that looked like Southern Baptist and other religious denominations that were prevalent for white populations in the South. And the second is through media. We're obviously familiar with the important role of media in shaping attitudes and beliefs and politics today. I think there's lots of evidence more and more emerging of late that media was playing a very similar role in the earlier part of the 20th century. And we see in places with more Southern white migrants, greater access to and prevalence of conservative right-wing media as early as the 1920s and 30s. And then this is something you can trace out all the way until today. And some of the most popular right-wing talk shows that are pervasive across parts of America, you see those being more prominent in some of these communities that were disproportionately settled by Southern whites. One other important thing to keep in mind is that these Southern whites helped found and organize and mobilize racially exclusionary and conservative organizations, some of which happen to be violent, but not all of which, organizations like the Ku Klux Klan, the United Daughters of the Confederacy, preserving the memory of the Confederate states prior to the Civil War and offering a revisionist view of the Civil War. And so I think there's a lot of these organizational and institutional channels through which Southern whites were able to perpetuate and diffuse their cultural influence in these new communities.
The jaw-dropping result that you have in this paper is that you test the extent of that migration against the vote share for Donald Trump in the 2016 election. So, how influential was this migration? Did it make a difference in 2016?
You know, this is a hard question to fully answer. We think it did make a difference. And I think there's a couple of ways that this could have happened. But I think for me, the most important thing to keep in mind is the peculiarity of the U.S. electoral college system that allocates votes based on vote shares state by state. And remember earlier, I told you that Southern whites migrated all over the country, not in particular states or even areas within states. And I think because they were so pervasive across the country, it created electoral possibilities that one would not have seen had they solely concentrated in a handful of states outside the South. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about their dispersion across states, it makes it possible to then have what look like small vote margins in aggregate could actually be quite important if you think state by state where the pivotal votes are happening. And so our results suggest that the influence of the Southern white diaspora on that vote share could have been pivotal. It's hard to tell you with 100% certainty that it was, but I think the evidence is strongly suggestive of pivotal influence on that vote.
And that's in particular states which rather surprisingly went for Donald Trump where people weren't expecting it.
Exactly.
And that's interesting. We're used to thinking about American politics as being made up of red and blue states. Is this helping us to understand why that is maybe less of a reliable guide anymore, but there is strong polarization between red and blue communities within those states?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one part of the growing polarization in the US is just a growing divide between high and low density areas across states, but especially within states. And so you see just this really sharp polarization taking place across rural and urban America and gradations in between. And what's important to think about, and given our results, is just that the Southern whites, in some respects, transplanted this Southern ideology and culture into these low density places across America. As this migration process unfolds over the last 120 years, you see more and more separation between the identity and culture in these low density places outside the South that look much more like the South, and the higher density places outside the South that look very, very different from those lower density southernized rural areas across much of America.
It's fascinating, Sam. It's so interesting to see these large historical events being reflected in electoral results in cultural attitudes today. So thanks for talking about it.
Thank you, Tim.
The paper is called The Other Great Migration, Southern Whites and the New Right, and the authors are Samuel Bazzi, Andreas Ferrara, Martin Fishbein, Thomas Pearson, and Patrick Tester. It is discussion paper 16739 at CPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research, and every week we bring you the most important latest research. So if you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics today. And when you subscribe, you'll find almost 200 episodes, so whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.